Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan is a politician without a party, or at least a politician in a party where neither Duncan nor the GOP are comfortable with each other. Duncan famously walked out on the Georgia Senate vote on election reforms, SB 202, and is eschewing a run for re-election to focus instead on his vision for a post-Trump Republican Party, dubbed GOP 2.0. Duncan visits with Savannah Morning News politics reporter Will Peebles on today's Commute Podcast. Today is Thursday, August the 5th, and you are listening to The Commute, presented by National Office Systems. I'm Savannah Morning News opinion editor Adam Van Brimmer. This edition of The Commute features an interview with Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, one of three high-profile Georgia Republicans to push back against former President Donald Trump's claims of a rigged 2020 election here in Georgia. Duncan is also the only one of those three, which also includes Governor Brian Kemp and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who is not having to hedge his political bets heading into the 2022 election. That's because he's not running for re-election. Duncan talks about that and more today with the Savannah Morning News politics reporter Will Peebles. But first, a quick plug about our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Here at the Savannah Morning News, we recently reopened our offices, and it's been great to see staffers in person regularly again. It helps that we have a great space designed and outfitted by Scott Center's team at National Office Systems. And we're not the only ones. National Office Systems has been working with Savannah area businesses for 30 years and leverages its partnerships with suppliers such as Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Furniture to deliver a top quality product. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. Now, here's Will Peebles' interview with Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan.
So, Jeff, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you coming in. I guess the most important thing that I want to talk about today is what is on the agenda? What are you doing in Savannah?
Well, certainly love to come down here. Just an incredible energy and just a sense of pride down here that is unmistakable. Folks are so grateful to live down here and work down here and raise their families. And so it's really a lot of good families and folks to talk to. Also wanted to spend some time at the port today. Such an important part of our global supply chains right here at the port. It's a huge part of our economic development story across the state. So just wrapped up an incredible tour there and getting to meet with some small business owners here in town and just really take in, you know, what they see is going on. It's a confusing period of time in the world, right? I mean, there's certain asset classes that are running off the charts. You know, everyone's home's worth more than it's ever been. Their 401k is worth more than it's ever been. But yet stimulus is out there and some other crosswinds. So just trying to be as close to the ground as I can to understand where we're at. And Savannah's a great place to do that.
It's been a wild time just kind of in general for pretty much, I would say, your whole term as lieutenant governor, right? Like it's been a heck of a time. Going back to like literally all the way back to 2018, when you were traveling the state campaigning, you were kind of an underdog candidate. When you look back on that time, do you ever think I could have done something better with it? Do you ever get the feeling like there was more you could have done with your stead? Because we're approaching the end of it and you're not running again in 22, right?
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, certainly I was an underdog. And if there was a word that described even, you know, an underdog of an underdog, that's probably a better description of where I was at. But, you know, I pitched this policy over politics platform and you know, fortunately, several million people believed me and voted for me. And so I had the opportunity to serve as lieutenant governor. I'm into my third year out of a four-year term. I have absolutely enjoyed every minute of it. Even in the tough moments, we have had so many incredible things cross our plate in the last 3 years, tragedies and ups and downs and a pandemic and global, you know, financial issues. And it's just wild to know all that's gone on, but the policy over politics works. And so that is important for me that I've been able to validate that. You know, one of the things I started off with in the Senate, as you know, 56 senators from all over the state, relatively, you know, I'm one of the youngest people in the room. There's a handful younger than me, but, you know, and as the president of the Senate, I launched out this big idea. I told them that honesty was the currency I wanted to trade. And, you know, I'm really proud of the way we've worked in a bipartisan format in the Senate and solved a lot of big problems. And we're going to continue to do that. We've got a year left, 16 months left on the term, one more session. We are going to run out this ground ball as hard as we can and keep working on foster care and health care and crime.
Gotcha. I love the baseball references.
Yeah, I can't help. You're
just a minor league pitcher back in the day. So yeah, I hear that. when you say I pitch this idea, I feel this. You know, that's funny. So yeah, I guess looking back at some of those tougher times, those bipartisan issues. One of the things that stands out to me, obviously, is the pandemic. You know, when you come into this job, you're not expecting to have to deal with that, to navigate around that kind of thing. And then following the pandemic, you know, the most unprecedented election cycle of my entire life happened. And you were kind of at the center of that for a little bit of it. You took some blowback because you defended the outcome of the election. When you look back at the November election, what is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, so I'll start with the first part of that. The pandemic was unprecedented, and I want to give Governor Brian Kemp all the credit in the world for really making great decisions on behalf of 11 million Georgians, putting politics aside, making sure the balance of lives and livelihoods really mattered in every decision he made. So I think he did an incredibly good job, and certainly proud to be a Georgian, even though we're still dealing with the tail ends, hopefully, of a global pandemic. You know, with regard to the November thing, you know, look, I voted for Donald Trump. I campaigned for him to some extent. Never really was a big fan, like tens of millions of other Americans, of his approach. The policies made sense in my politics and in my minds as a small business owner, as a father, as a family guy. But the approach really just kind of drove me nuts, like it did other folks around the country. But, you know, my reason for stepping up at the moment in time right after the November election was Georgia ran a fair and legal election. It pained me to think that somebody for selfish reasons was going to try to call us out unfairly, inaccurately, that we did not run a fair and legal election. And certainly I paid a lot of attention to trying to ask the right questions of the Secretary of State, Attorney General, the governor's office, elections officials. And got the facts. And the facts are still to this day, you know, how many ever months removed from the November election, I've yet to have a single person deliver a single piece of information that would be considered even remotely a fact in any courtroom, any hearing, any setting. I chose to do the most conservative thing, and that was to be honest, in my opinion. I felt like being honest was going to be a long-term strategy for our party and for me personally. I've got three kids that watch what dad does every minute of every day. I've got a wife who's put our entire life on hold. And I couldn't imagine standing there in front of a microphone or a television camera telling somebody some false narrative just to create a political, you know, smokescreen to try to get my party to win. Just didn't make sense. We actually got to see the unfortunate effects of that in the November or in the January runoff, where Republican senators lost, not because I don't think they represented the values and kind of the mindsets of Georgians, but because you know, the former president leaned into the race in a way that was disorienting, told folks to stay home. Their vote didn't count. You know, it was not helpful. And unfortunately, we lost. But you know what? It's still America. We still have a bright future in front of us. We're still the greatest country in the world to live. And my job as a conservative Republican is to position good ideas and try to convince folks to vote for our party as we move forward.
That's something I really enjoy talking about Republicans with, is the effect of Donald Trump on politics, especially local politics in Georgia, you know, like local as far as state politics go on a national scale. How do you think that has changed? That, because one of the T in your PET is tone, you know, and that was a big part of it, at least from my understanding, why people like President Trump, why people, especially Republicans who feel like they haven't been or started saying that they haven't been represented by true, you know, people that they can relate to. That's what they related to a lot. Like, how has the tone of Donald Trump changed Georgia politics, in your opinion?
Yeah. You know, I haven't run a poll on this, but I would bet, you know, 10 million more people would have voted for Donald Trump if he would have just had a better tone, a more professional, you know, tone that encouraged instead of discouraged. That's my personal, you know, opinion. Maybe one day there'll be a poll to show that. Look, I don't know. I mean, certainly, you know, I'm not an expert on this. I'm not a data scientist. But what I do feel is that folks did feel like he was fighting. But I think it's more importantly, we need to start fighting for things, right? Not fighting with people, fighting for issues, right? So I'm very passionate conservative. In fact, one of the biggest hits on me when I was running for lieutenant governor against some of my primary opponents and even in the general was as a state rep for 5 years, I was I was too conservative to serve as the statewide elected official. If it was raising taxes, I was a no. If it was school choice, I was a yes. If it was, you name it, I was there. But now to be, you know, kind of pushed out in certain circles just because I didn't buy into the conspiracy theory. I think our pathway forward has got to be to move past the post-election debacle, whether you still think there was fraud or not, right? So be it. Let's agree to disagree on that. And let's look forward, right? Because that's really where we're going to become the state we can truly become. That's where, I said this the other day in a speech, I stumbled into it, but if we're going to become the nation the founding fathers thought we could become, we got to make some improvements. We got to start to figure out a way to get along better. We got to start to figure out a way to negotiate with people on different political spectrums, not because we want to cash in my Republican card or somebody cash in their Democrat card, but so that we can have legitimate conversations and solve real problems. I mean, we start to tackle some real issues like healthcare. You know, for the better part of 10 plus years, we've been trying to make partisan decisions on healthcare, basically just lobbing grenades across the fence, and nothing's changed. We still have a partially broken healthcare system that costs too much and has not enough access. If I put down my Republican hat, somebody puts down their Democrat hat, we get in the middle and we talk about, hey, how do we drive better access and lower prices to patients and physicians and hospital systems? That to me is just one example of what happens when you start to find ways to work together.
Gotcha. And that's kind of like the whole message of GOP 2.0, right? Like it's getting people to come together, to work together. But when I heard GOP 2.0, I was like, if it's a 2.0, then what is a 1.0? What was GOP 1.0 in your eyes? Like, what was that? And what was the catalyst for it needing to change? Because, by the 1.0, 2.0 model, you were in 1.0 as well, right?
Yeah. So I think it's what, and just off the cuff here, I think it's what GOP 1.0 had become, right? It had become everything you don't like instead of what you do like. And to me, when I was growing up and shaping my political values and really understanding, not just I was raised in a Republican household, but as I became a father and as I became a small business owner, I shaped those conservative values because they made sense. I could pull them all together, and to me, it was the party of ideas, right? Why is it better to keep tax dollars in the taxpayers' pockets? Well, I think that they're able to spur the economy and grow and invest in their own. Why do I think it's better to have public safety and make that a priority? Because I think if a business owner or family should be safe in where they live and play at. Why do I think that national security is important? So, if I look back to this past election cycle, one of the things I talk about in this book I've got coming out in September, GOP 2.0, is this story about the debate or the event that Donald Trump held, the rally in Rome 2 days before the election. And I was one of the speakers at it. And, I think, and it totally spoke for like 46 minutes. Three of those were talking about all the great things he had done, like really, really important great things, like massively conservative, Supreme Court justices, three different vaccines, an economy that had whipsawed, but really showed signs of coming back. All of those things that you could literally have spent hours talking about, he spent 3 minutes and spent the balance of the time, 44 minutes, talking about all the things that everybody else was doing wrong. And to me, there is an appetite for that in certain circles. And maybe there was enough appetite to win in 2016. But GOP 2.0 is about trying to win elections going forward. And there's so many different reasons why people are showing up to GOP 2.0, right? And I think that's an important message that I want folks to know, is that we're inviting people in, right? This isn't just about the things we don't like. This isn't a club that says you got to be with us on 10 out of 10. Right? You can be with us on 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 issues. We can agree to disagree and work to change each other's minds, but we want to invite people in. And the reality is folks are going to get to 2.0 because of a couple of different strategies. One, some of them are going to believe from start to finish it's the right strategy to go forward. Some are going to get there because of one or two issues that are really, really massively important to them, that they're realizing that they don't have a seat at the table right now. Right? They don't democratically controlled House and Senate and the White House. Like if you care about a conservative issue, you've got no real representation in the majority. And some folks are going to get here full stock and barrel, believe in Donald Trump and all the things that went on after the election, but they're going to get tired of losing. And unfortunately, that is going to be a narrative that we're going to see play out. I think 2022 is going to be a difficult cycle across the country. I think some people are going to win that surprise us. I think some people are going to lose that surprise us. But at the end of the day, I think America is going to start gravitating towards adults in the room. Right? Just like our businesses do, just like our churches do, just like our families do. You need adults to make decisions. You need folks that are willing to invest in understanding the policies that make sense, being able to lead people through the tough times, and be able to do that with an encouraging tone. We can't do this alone in our country. We've got to make sure that we build large coalitions that don't just whipsaw every 2 years.
Yeah, and your concept is interesting as a whole to me, because it flies very much in the face of, at least from my perspective, what won Donald Trump the presidency. You know, like, Donald Trump comes in, he's this outsider. He's this person who says things that other politicians won't say because of, you know, be it because they don't want to sound rude or mean or whatever, or because they want to hedge votes. But since then, he's kind of turned into this model that local Republicans, state level Republicans, have to almost embody to an extent. You know, like, it's changed the way that I think that people have worked for so long. And do you think that there's an appetite for this coming together, this let's not be cruel to each other anymore? Because just from me reading it here, it sounds like, let's go back to the way it was when we all just acted like politicians instead of
animals. Yeah. I do think, well, I'll start from the beginning. I think there's a shelf life on the Donald Trump clones out there trying to model and mimic what he's doing. I think there's a shelf life. I can't draw a date on the calendar where it crosses from majority to minority. But if you look at the data, and we're tracking the data on a weekly basis, GOP 2.0 is really watching the different metrics that show the support, right? And like I said, some folks are getting there for different reasons. And it's all about how you ask the question. I think there is a shelf life to it, because at the end of the day, folks are going to get tired of losing and they want to start winning. I think if you look at the overall number of people that Donald Trump is endorsing around the country, there's only one common denominator. It's not because they've been tough on taxes. It's not because they've been tough on crime. It's not because they've been tough on conservative values or Second Amendment supporters, or you name your passionate issue. There's only one litmus test if Donald Trump's going to endorse you, and that's, did you buy into his conspiracy theories? That's it. That's the only common denominator. And to me, that's part of this shelf life. That becomes a losing strategy very, very quickly. So I call that the short-term sugar high. Now, let me go give him some compliments. He validated very quickly that an outsider, business-minded change agent can come into town and get change done quickly in DC. I mean, literally, he shook the apple cart quickly and rearranged everything, and it worked. But the reality is, leadership is more than just a campaign slogan. It's more than just a one notion. You have to put on display. And leadership also has to morph, right? Like, every business, I can't just start a business and sell the same product today that I do in 4 years. I've got to improve my customer service, my web presence, my product, my colors, all that stuff. I think the same thing is with the presidency and other important leadership roles. You've got to make sure that you continue to progress. That's GOP 2.0. Let's take the wins. Let's take the strengths. Let's take all the things that really resonated and made and worked for us. And then let's go improve them. And then in 4 years, we're going to have to do it again. And 4 years after that, we're going to have to do it again. That, to me, is a strategy that is ultimately a winning strategy.
For sure. Yeah. And let's talk about GOP 2.0 just kind of as a concept, because we've been talking about it, like, we're familiar with it, because I know you are, and I've recently become so. But it's not another political party. It's not a new branch. It's not something else you can check the box on your voter registration card. It is a nonprofit.
Yeah. So GOP 2.0 is a movement, right? So there's a couple of different elements to it. Obviously, the name lends credit to the fact that it is a new and improved, but it's a movement. It's not a party. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. And certainly there's a century full of people trying to do that. I am a Republican. I believe in an overwhelming majority of the policies that make sense. And so do, I think, a majority of Americans. But 2.0 is a 501c4 organization that's simply there to start to build the brand of 2.0 and be a safe place for common sense Republicans and conservatives to call home. Right now, you're either in one camp or the other, and it's like a binary number situation. This is a safe place to call home. It's a safe place that if you really do believe in conservative policies, you want to be more empathetic with your tone and reach out to somebody and invite them into the fold. And then the T is tone. So as you mentioned earlier, pet project. This is my pet project: policy, empathy, and tone. And and then the book is obviously the catalyst moment. The book allows us to put out there nationally, really where in writing exactly what the game plan looks like. And then from there, we're fielding requests from literally all over the country for me to come out and speak to their groups or their crowds or do podcasts or do television interviews. I'm on doing national television interviews. There's a vacuum of leadership right now, I believe, not only in the Republican Party but nationally. Right. I think there was, in my opinion, and hopefully this doesn't come across too partisan, but in my opinion, there's a lot of reluctant Biden voters that the situation, the personality of Donald Trump forced them into that situation. And this is a safe place for them to call home.
Gotcha. So I don't know, because what it sounds like is like we are getting moderates and the folks who are going to vote Republican regardless to be part of the GOP 2.0. Like, is that something that wins a primary? Is that your goal to try to bring in that side? Maybe even some, you know, just slightly left-leaning moderates as well. Like, what is the goal of GOP 2.0?
Yeah, so the degree of separation between the middle and the right is not nearly as big as what I believe the outside fringes are making it, right? I mean, political consultants and the outside 5% can use social media and all those means to drive wedges that that feel like they're 1,000 feet apart when they're maybe a millimeter apart. So I think there's an opportunity to pull into the fold. But also, there's this big notion of agree to disagree on a handful of issues, right? I think there's an opportunity to work with folks on other sides of the issue. I'll use probably the most controversial issue out there, the life issue. I'm very pro-life. That's how I was raised. That's how I'm very comfortable in that environment. I know there's other folks that are very passionate on the other side of the issue that are pro-choice. While we're waiting for courts and science to prove one way or the other to be valid or invalid, let's go to work together to go make this country the greatest place to be a foster kid, the greatest system for adoptive processes so that kids can walk into loving families, right? Let's not let this divide just completely discourage us from doing good. I think we can use that issue on immigration. Prime example. I truly believe in border security. I maybe believe in it more than Donald Trump does. I think it's imperative. But we also got to figure out what to do with 16 plus million undocumented folks that are here. We can't turn another blind eye. We need to separate those that are paying taxes and integrated into the society and those that are criminals and selling drugs and all of those other things. We need to do that. But as Republicans, we only seem to want to live on one side. As Democrats only want to live on the other side of that issue. If you want to get something done, work in parallel with each other and get both things done.
Right. It sounds like, yeah, but it sounds like what you just said isn't that. It sounds like you're coming together and then doing what the Republican side would do, right? Like keeping, like you said, with the abortion issue, you were like, we bring folks together and then whatever the science determines down the road is what we'll go with. But right now, best foster care system in America, not if you want an abortion, go get it. If you don't,
certainly you don't I would never encourage anybody to do that.
Yeah.
That's not my woven into me or my character.
Naturally. Yeah.
But it's one of those issues where we can't just let everything turn into a grease fire, right? Every issue, guns, immigration, healthcare, abortion, everything turns into a grease fire and we get little done. And I think there's an overwhelming majority of Americans that are ready for adults in the room to go figure out solutions. This book talks about solutions to problems. I'm already started writing my second book that really dives deeper into these issues and deeper about putting strategies out there. You know, I really, truly, genuinely believe that there is a silent majority of folks that are ready to see solutions to real problems. And once again, start focusing on being the greatest nation in the world, being the leader on so many things around technology, innovation, culture. These are the areas that I think that if we focus in as a GOP, yeah, selfishly, I want Republicans to be in charge, right? I think that's a noble, selfish cause, if that's even such a thing. But I think, you know, because I think our ideas are so good at times, they even help the people who don't vote for us. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay if I improve the healthcare system, that it helps Democrats and Republicans equally. I'm okay if I improve the economy and create high paying quality jobs in Georgia, that just as many Democrats get those jobs as Republicans. And so we need to remove that bitter taste from people's mouth that work, you know, 12, 15 hours a day at a very grueling job and come home and all they get is maybe 10 minutes of Sean Hannity on TV screaming, or on the other side of the aisle, 10 minutes of Don Lemon on the other side screaming at the top of their lungs about something that really doesn't even affect their life. I think that's the void that we're going to fill with GOP 2.0.
We interrupt this interview between journalist Will Peebles and Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan so I can tell you about the best source for local news in Savannah, Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. We go in-depth on topics important to you, whether it's Savannah City Manager search, actually now Savannah City Manager hire, thank goodness, or the best new restaurants around town. If you aren't a subscriber, now's the time to try us out. You can get full access to our digital content for $1 a month for the next 6 months. All those stories marked subscriber only on our website, this gets you behind that paywall. Go to SavannahNow.com/subscribe now and sign up. Now back to the interview.
Why do you think, and you know, I don't think there is a necessarily a right or wrong answer to this question, but why do you think that the political spectrum is as polarized as it is right now? Why do you think that we've gotten there?
I don't have an exact answer. I think that there's a number of reasons that we've gotten here. One, it's a lot like, I was thinking about this the other day. It's a lot like the fight in high school, right? All day long, you hear about two guys that are going to get in a fight, and they're jawing at each other all day, and they're going to meet out, you know, behind the high school I went to. There was a bunch of railroad tracks, and they're going to meet out at the tracks, and then the whole school shows up there, and then you know they get in a tussle and whatever else. It's almost like this feeding frenzy, but that didn't solve the problem. I mean, as adults, right? As you grow up, you realize that didn't do anything, but you're attracted to it. It's kind of human nature. I think the realities are the problems that we have are real, right? Like, if you take crime is the most bipartisan problem we have in Georgia maybe right now, right? COVID's now obviously starting to flow in, and I'm not exactly certain when this runs, but COVID is a thing too. But crime is a major, major issue. It's probably a major issue here. It's definitely a major issue in Atlanta and communities all over the country. So I launched a $250 million tax credit idea that allowed folks to write, individuals and corporations to write checks directly to law enforcement agencies. In return, you get 100% tax credit. And they can only spend the money on three ways: hire more officers, pay them more, or train them better. Bipartisan idea, right? But the pushback is, well, wait a minute, I can't pick on the other side now, on both camps, right? To me, that's a GOP 2.0 mindset. Real people, there's businesses here that don't open their doors up late or early because of the crime or the potential of crime or the feeling of, or the fact that they don't have customers yet, or people, nobody's on the street that late at night. We need to do a better job of leading, right? Leading. And leadership's lonely sometimes. And right now it's really, really lonely. But I, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's a lot like the Wayne Gretzky theory, right? Don't skate to the puck, skate to where it's going. And that's what GOP 2.0 is. We know that Americans are going to gravitate towards adults and good decisions and good policies. And that's where we're going to be for them.
I admire the confidence in that.
I don't want to underestimate the size of the task, right? My wife says, you know, everyone says glass half full or half empty. She says my cup's overflowing in my eyes. But look, that's just the way I was raised. I was the same way. You know, I've been an underdog my entire life. I gave the commencement address at Georgia Tech a couple of years ago. It was probably the most favorite moment of my entire, you know, tenure of getting to have appearances. And I talked to this whole crew of kids, 650 students, are probably the smartest, brightest folks in graduating that day. And I said, look, I hate the fact that I'm the underdog. I was a 69th round draft pick by the Marlins, which, if you don't know anything about baseball, that's like extremely late. Small business guy, took a home equity line to start my business, won by 55 votes in a state house race, super underdog in the lieutenant governor's race. I hate being the underdog. I despise it, but I'm really good at it. And for whatever reason, being the underdog does not scare me. And certainly GOP 2.0 is the underdog. It's a concept that flies in the face of where the Republican Party's been, but it's where they're going.
Why do this instead of run for lieutenant governor again?
Yeah, great question. I love the job of lieutenant governor. And certainly if I was just looking to just continue the trajectory of being the lieutenant governor and the president of the Senate and really championing economic development and taking on the job, that would be fine. But this is an even bigger political opportunity for us, for my family, to try to heal and rebuild this party nationally. Georgia is in the cross. The whole country knows everything that happens in Georgia, and they will all the way through the end of the election cycle, right? Former president is going to continue to put his crosshairs on us unnecessarily. The world's paying attention to what we're doing. The Democrats are targeting every race here. There's an opportunity for me to be a part of healing and rebuilding this party in a genuine way that will last hopefully longer than I even last, that'll make a long lasting difference in the trajectory. I said this at a Rotary speech the other day in Atlanta. I said that if GOP 2.0 is done right, this will benefit both parties. It'll redefine the rules of engagement between the left and the right and allow us to get back to having more civilized debates around real problems and coming up with real solutions.
I know it's a concept that you're advocating for, but how does it actually function as a mechanism for change, I guess? You know, like, you can throw a ton of money at this. You can get books out there. You can get as much as you want out there. But unless voters decide that what they want to do is vote for these candidates who do not act, I'll be honest, be frank with you, who do not act like Donald Trump is what it sounded like. How does that translate into the GOP actually coming together? Like, do you have buy-in from this from high-level people in the state government? Do you have buy-in from this at, because I feel like it does mirror the Georgia politics. I know, like the classic Georgia Republicans, you know, like that is, it does make sense to me in that, but do you think that people will buy into it? I guess, I don't know.
Yeah. The answer is yes. I do think, and I'm watching the momentum grow nationally. You know, the interesting thing is I have so many folks in and around the Capitol that will kind of, you know, they do the same thing. They look both ways. They put their arm around me. They whisper in my ear, "Hey, you're doing a great job, man. Thanks so much for being so honest. I wish my district was a little more supportive of being honest, or I wish, you know, whatever group I represented." But nationally, you know, we're watching this continue to gain momentum. The book is just the starting point. It's just a way to get the message out on a bigger platform. We've got, you know, GOP2.org is the website. We continue to have folks join the movement, literally all 50 states, people from all over the country. What's interesting now is I'm starting to, as we build our team, and I've got an executive director and fundraising strategist and PR firms. And so we're building a real 501c4 that's nationally, you know, kind of building its footprint. We're now fielding calls from elected folks in races across the country in all types of, you know, federal elections, state elections, that are wanting to see if we could lend a helping hand, if we could find a way to interject our target message into their races. I think as we get into 2022, that's going to be an even bigger opportunity for us. As I field requests for speeches in different parts of the country, or, you know, media interviews or whatever the story is, it gives us an opportunity to get the message out. So we are brand building 101, and we have to be true to the brand. You know, like, I could sit here on this and I could just lambaste, you know, Donald Trump, you know, and say everything in the world, but I'm using a GOP 2.0 mindset to message. My tone has to match what I'm telling everybody, right? That's how I teach my kids, right? Don't just do what I say. I got to do it too. And so as we message this tone, we got to be careful as to not getting sucked into the vortex of, you know, oh, if I just call them, you know, if I just say this on Twitter in 240 characters or 80 characters, whatever it is, it'll feel good for 5 minutes.
I'm just going to ask it. Do you feel like when you ran against Schaefer in 2018, you applied the GOP 2.0 model mindset to your race?
So, great question. I think when I did, I felt like we gained traction. I was able to create separation for me. I think when we went into more of a mudslinging stage and an opportunity during the campaign, I feel like I just blended in with him, right? That was his message and motive. And so part of this was a learning experience. Running a statewide race like that was, Who do I really truly want to be? I'll go back to a baseball thing. You know, everyone loves to throw a fastball. I love to throw a fastball, right? Everybody in the crowd wants you to throw a fastball every single pitch. Everybody in the political kind of arena wants you to throw a high, tight fastball, right? They'll cheer you on. But if all you do is throw fastballs, you lose. You'll lose at the end of the day. Everyone will beat the ball in the gaps and they'll hit a home run and you'll lose the game. You got to learn to throw hit corners and throw off speed pitches. And so to me, that was this whole suck in the politics was, hey, you got to do this. This is the only way you can win. The reality is, I think we got to change the mindsets. And I learned that during the statewide race. I feel like we ran a good race, but I feel like I want to run a great race going forward.
Sure. And I think that's where, like, it meets where the idea clashes in my head, you know, because GOP 2.0 makes a lot of sense until you go up against someone who is, you know, in a primary, who's saying Donald Trumpian things. Like, that's when your ideology versus the one that has worked for Donald Trump kind of clash, right? Like, if you're advising a candidate, are you just going to tell them to not throw any dirt or not throw any, like, shade or anything? Because no, it's a complicated
thing. Yeah, no, I think, you know, one of the litmus tests that we always tried to use on the campaign when we were running statewide against a very formidable opponent who's now the head of the Republican Party statewide.
Yeah.
Was, you know, fact-based. Is it fact-based, right? I voted against House Bill 170, the largest tax increase in the history of the state of Georgia, the transportation tax. He voted for it and he carried it. And so we hammered it. We spent millions of dollars on ads in trying to compare those two and try to create that difference. But at the end of the day, we, the people, you know, if we, you know, in the media world, if you want to sell advertising, you got to get viewers. Well, if viewers want to see you talk about the steak and sizzle, then you're going to talk about the steak and sizzle, right? Because that's going to get viewers and that's going to sell ads. I think this is a mindset change. I think the unfortunate events that unfortunately, very unfortunately, were bookended by January 6th, the most egregious moment in time that I can ever remember happening in Washington, D.C.
Yes,
I mean, just beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
I want never anybody in my influence to ever think that any part of that was okay or acceptable. But that crescendo accelerated. It accelerated the this I think gravitational pull back towards wanting to have adults in the room in a more civilized debate, in my opinion. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay. I guess, and this is the question Adam just wrote down. What is the end game for this? What is ultimately, when do you know that GOP 2.0 has succeeded? Does it have a finish line?
Yeah. So the target that we've got here in place is we want GOP 2.0 to significantly influence who the Republican nominee is for president in the 2024 cycle. There's a lot of work to get there, right? We have a 2022 cycle. I hope to be somewhat effective there, but quite honestly, there's so much chaos on the battlefield inside the Republican Party right now. As optimistic as I am, I'm not optimistic that we're going to have a tremendous amount of momentum going there. It might be a reckoning moment where folks realize, look, I've got to change it. I've got to change direction here slightly if we're going to actually be back in charge. So we want to significantly influence who the Republican nominee is in 2024. For president. I think there's an opportunity. We're starting to gain traction. We're starting to, some of those names and people and places out there that are a part of that process are starting to engage and wanting to see more about who we are and what we are. And like I said, I want this to be a safe place. I don't want somebody to have to come into this and be regretful walking to their church on Sunday morning and have to try to explain the actions of GOP 2.0. I don't want them to have to go stand in a meeting and give a presentation in front of all their employees and everybody know because of their social media posts that they're engaged with something that is just outlandish or you know, unbelievable or just downright wrong. And so that to me is kind of this environment we're trying to build with GOP 2.0.
That's a tough. That's an uphill battle.
Absolutely. But look, it's worth the effort, right? This is our country. This is a party that I've literally put my entire family's life on hold for, to try to go put conservative leadership on display. And I'm proud of the efforts we've done for the first 3 years in Lieutenant Governor's role. We're going to certainly finish hard in the final year. But this is our moment in time. This could be a once in a generation moment for us to change the trajectory of the Republican Party, to actually have a chance to have a seat at the table. I fear if we go off in this direction, it could be decades before we find ourselves back in a place of, and may not even recognize who we are. Our concessions may be so big and wide just to get a seat back at the table that we won't even know which party's which.
Yeah. And I guess, does that involve you, that vision for the future? Do you see yourself being in office again at any point?
I do. I hope so. I really enjoy being in elected office. I really enjoy having the trust of millions of people that you know, go off to work every day with their busy lives and raise their families and elect you to go kind of make those big, tough decisions and put them in a better spot. So certainly I hope. But right now, you know, who knows what that is? I'm just committed to trying to heal and rebuild. And quite honestly, I don't want to be a part of something that's so broken right now. I feel like there's an opportunity to change directions. And if there's an opportunity that pokes its head up down the road, then certainly that's something me and my family would take a look at.
I guess SB 202. You've said, I remember during, I think it was like March or something. It was when it was still the omnibus, you know, it hadn't taken its final form yet. You're presiding over a discussion on it in the Senate and you walked out. Now that was back when things were a little bit different in the bill, and it's not how it ultimately ended up, but some of those things did stay in there. What do you think about 202?
Yeah. So the first version that came out from the Senate was not SB 202. It was a totally, totally different bill. And I won't explain the whole sausage making process, but there was a bill that came out, and quite honestly, it was an overstep of epic proportion in certain areas. There was elimination of no excuse absentee voting, which was ridiculous to even think of because it was a Republican effort that was brought forward in 2005. In fact, the Speaker of the House was a part of that legislative process. The governor was a part of that legislative process. So to think we were going to take that out, there was other things in it that were just essentially a hat tip to the former president saying, hey, we, you know, here you go. We're helping you out.
Demoting Roethlisberger.
Really no expectation that bill was going to pass. But when it came up on the floor, I quite honestly spent a lot of energy and effort trying to get them not to do it. I thought it was a bad step for Republicans. I thought it set the stage and wrote the talking points for the Democrats at the later point when we finally would pass election reform, which is exactly what happened. So I walked off the rostrum. I said, look, I don't have a vote. I'm the president of the Senate, not a senator. I'm gonna log my vote by walking off the Senate floor and letting you guys do what you're going to do. Fast forward to the final version of SB 202. It finally passed. Interesting enough, in between those two points, I championed four bipartisan election reform bills that we got Democrats and Republicans to vote for, not all, not unanimous, but it was certain different elements that were all actually included in the final version of 202. But nobody wanted to necessarily take this as a bipartisan approach or some sort of team effort, because that just killed the narrative, right? It killed the narrative for both sides, killed the narrative for Republicans wanting to blame, you know, the Democrats for whatever, or trying to acknowledge Donald Trump's issues. And also the Democrats, that everybody was disenfranchised all of a sudden. And it was, hurting the turnout. Long story short, 202 passes. I give it a B, right? It was a pretty good piece of legislation. It did a lot of innovative cleanups. There was a lot of things in it that we learned in the hyper intensive time of the 10 weeks of things that we needed to do better and modernize. A couple of silly things that I just didn't think made sense. And quite honestly, they hurt Republicans way more than they would have actually affected anything in some sort of voting.
The water.
The food and water. Yeah. Come on. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I don't care if it was doing the greatest thing in the world. There's no way to message that. And it was a foolish step. And it was one that just, I have no explanation for it other than it passed. And it was foolish. We already have laws in the books. If I want to give you a bottle of water because you look like you're pouring with sweat, and if I put my logo on it, or if I have a shirt, or I'm saying who to vote for, that's already illegal. Double the fines then if you feel like you need to make inroads. The other was the punitive swipes on Brad Raffensperger. Just a complete and utter hat tip to Donald Trump and saying, he was right. Brad Raffensperger, the only thing he's guilty of is being Donald Trump's scapegoat in this whole process. And, look, no election's perfect, but, at the end of the day, there was nearly 5 million people that voted and worked with, unbelievable amounts of audits, hand counts, recounts, you name it. Certainly, there's things we could have all done better. Just like the next election, there's going to be things that we can all do better. Taking those punitive swipes at him was foolish. But overall grade was a B.
Yeah. How does it get up to an A? What was anything missing from it, or did it just have punitive things?
Well, I think, the food and water and the Raffensperger taking them off the board and some other things, but quite honestly, I don't know if I've ever voted for an A+ piece of legislation, or at least champion, even stuff that I support by the time it gets there. And that's really the legislative process working, right? That's everybody having a seat at the table to, help shape it instead of just one party or one person.
What do you think? Do you think that we're going to see as much controversy in the midterms as we saw? Obviously, I don't know. It'd be tough to get to the level of like post fall or post November 3rd of last year, but during the midterms and going up to it, do you think that any of that just toxicity is going to roll over, that people are going to be distrusting of the system still? What do you see happening in 2022?
So I hope not. But my wife tells me I have an uncomfortably good grasp of reality. My guess is it's going to be, a continued chaotic process, because whoever wins is not going to say a word, and whoever loses is going to say everything, right? So let's just flip the tables and say the Democrats, lose in every statewide election and in all the other, congressional seats. At this point, Donald Trump has seeded the groundwork for them picking up his talking points and going to use the same things. And so we got to get out of this sore loser mentality, right? Going back to the baseball world, I played, so many years of baseball. I've lost more games. I've been on teams, games that pitchers giving up home runs, guys striking out. Everybody handles a loss differently, but the best players always seem to handle it before they got back to the dugout. Right. They were mad at themselves. They were gripping the bat. You can see the veins in their neck, but then they get over it because the team's worth more than that at bat, or the team's worth more than that pitch. Some guys just can't help themselves. They start on the mound or the plate. They go down the steps. They rearrange the bat rack. They go up the steps to the clubhouse. They rearrange the locker room. They rearrange the shower, and they finally get it out of their system. Well, we can't do that. This is like real stuff that we're working on. We've got a pandemic we're in the midst of. We have an uncertain, global economy that's got a supply chain disruption of epic proportion. We've got inflationary pressures. We've got disrupted labor markets. There's real problems that if we just get staring at all these shiny objects, we're going to have problems.
Gotcha. Well, I hope that those problems are easily solved, and maybe we have a nice polite. Oh, well done, sir. Good job. You've won next year, but I don't see it happening, to be honest with you. Yeah, I don't know. It's been like that since 2016, with collusion, Russia and everything. The Democrats were yelling at Trump when he won, and then, Trump loses and surprise, surprise, he's yelling the same thing back. And it makes me nervous because we didn't usually see it. I guess there was the recount, back in the day with Bush and
Gore.
Jesus, forgot who
the guy was. You're a historian.
Yeah. But yeah, like you get to that point and it's like, when do you ever have a political contest again that the other side is just not like, well, you lost and here's why, here's a conspiracy theory why, or here's a something that would be investigated by the FBI for months that won't turn out to be anything why, you know, it's, I don't know. It's a weird spot.
Yeah. Well, certainly if GOP 2.0 is on one side of that equation, winning or losing, I hope to see an adult in the room type mentality. You know, look, we got a lot of work in front of us. Here in Georgia, here in this country, but it's worthy work for us to do. GOP2.org, if you're interested in finding out more information, and the campaign slogan of policy over politics is still alive and well for Jeff Duncan.
What's the name of the book, just 2.0?
GOP 2.0. It's available on Amazon for pre-sale.
Cool. All right. Yeah.
That's a wrap for this episode of The Commute. Thank you to Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan for coming into our offices and our studio to speak with Will Peebles today for the podcast. Thank you also to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your podcast app by searching The Commute with at Savannah Opinion. The Commute returns with a new episode next Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend.